local people have vanished in fair weather, swallowed by the prairie that we know to fear and respect.
I wonder if you have by any chance run across a doctor from Independence.
No. I haven't seen any doctor.
Once again, it's Tuesday, and you know what that means. It's time for a new episode of 13 O'Clock. This is episode 66.
Damn.
I know, right? Did I kind of sound like Casey Kasem just then?
No.
Episode 66. Episode 66. Oh. You can tell I listened to the radio a lot back in the day.
Back in the day. Yeah. He's been dead for a while, I think, isn't he?
Is he?
I think he's dead.
Probably, I guess so. But yeah, today's show, we're going back into the true crime. Well, this was also another request, although, again, I can't remember who requested it.
Yeah.
But it's actually the Bloody Benders.
Yeah, I've never heard anything about this.
This kills me. I hadn't really heard much about it either. Like, I'd heard the name, but I didn't really know much about it. I mean, they're essentially, they call them America's first serial killing family.
Right.
Which I guess they kind of are. You know, we did a show about H.H. Holmes and a lot of shit about him. Yes, he was a horrible murderer and stuff like that, but a lot of shit about him is exaggerated.
Yeah, fake news.
Okay, but like this shit is not really exaggerated. And I feel like there's really not much about this.
Okay.
Like I kind of looked up, you know, there's a lot of blogs, there's a lot of websites. Obviously, they have a Wikipedia page, they have a Murderpedia page, but there's no like long form documentaries about them.
Right.
Like I found an episode of an investigation discovery show called Evil Kin, and they had an episode about them. There was a movie made about them, like an independent movie made last year that was just called Bender. And I've heard it was all right, but it didn't seem to get many reviews or anything like that. And actually, if you're watching the YouTube version, the clip I put at the beginning of the show was actually from the trailer for that movie.
Now, just based briefly on what you've told me so far, you know, like in the past days that you've been researching this, this is about the closest you're actually going to get to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre being a reality, a family
this
of
is,
killers.
Reading about this. It, this is what it reminded me of.
Okay.
And I've also seen other articles online. There was one on, I think, Wicked Horror, the Wicked Horror blog, that compared them to the Firefly family from Rob Zombie's, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. And they are kind of like that.
Right. Now, I want to nip all this in the bud before we start this program. There may be inconsistencies because a lot of the research material has inconsistencies in it.
Because this is old. This is an old case.
And you always have these serial killer fanboys, you know, jumping in and, you know, thumbs down and then, you know, not cutting us any slack in the comment sections. Look, the material is inconsistent. The source material is inconsistent.
I just thought this was an interesting story, and I'm glad someone recommended it because I wasn't really familiar with it.
Right.
And like the more I read about it, I'm like, this is the most fucked up shit ever. It's like, why don't more people know about this?
All right.
I mean, it's not like they're going to teach it to you in history class or anything like that.
It's
horrifying.
Let's get our plugs and announcements out of the way, and we'll dive into this.
All right. So, okay. We only have a couple plugs this week. Just wanted to say, obviously, my book, The Faceless Villain, if you're into true crime, it's all about unsolved murders. And it's the first volume. There's going to be two more. The next one will be out next year.
Print copy's selling real well.
Yeah, so the print copy's out. The ebook copy is out. And I'm putting the final touches on the audiobook, so I'll upload that. That'll be out in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I have a little list of people that wanted the free audio codes because I get 25 audio codes from ACX Audible.
You guys, the site. Be patient. You're on the list. You're going to get your audio book.
Yeah, as soon as it comes out. Because like I said, I'm sorry it's taken so long, but you know, I wanted it to be really good and perfect before I uploaded it.
Upside to this is that Jenny's kind of upgraded the audio program that she's been using. This one's going to sound a lot better.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's going to sound a lot better than Unseen Hand.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully it does.
One day we might remaster Unseen Hand, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Right.
But yeah, so if you're into true crime and you want to pick up the print copy, and if you do like it, please leave a review. And thank you to everyone that's left a review so far. I also want to give a mention to the podcast Conspiranormal with Adam Sane. I recorded a interview with them. It was about an hour and a half long, I think, talking about a lot of the kind of lesser known cases that were in The Faceless Villain. So if you're into unsolved murders and I will put a link when that show comes up, probably on the Facebook page and Twitter and all that other kind of stuff. So you can check that out.
We
and
also did some, I jumped in on some bonus material.
We also did, Tom and I both did some kind of bonus material for their patron only, feed. And we talked for about an hour about, I don't even remember what the hell.
I can't remember, we were supposed
to be talking about the Cleveland Torso murders, which we kind of did, but then we kind of went off on a bunch of tangents.
On that one, I realized how amusing I am. Every time I'd open my mouth, those guys would start laughing.
What's really cool about those guys, about Conspiranormal, and it's a really good podcast, is like they're actually big fans of ours, which is actually really flattering.
They're throwing back comments and jokes that I made on earlier shows, and I'm going, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Because like I said, we don't script any of this shit. So sometimes people that listen to the show like remember the stuff better than we do. But that's what happens. Also, we put up a new movie review. Well, it's technically not a movie review. It was a TV series. It was the Logan's Run TV series from 1977.
Had fun making that one.
Yeah, that was actually fun. I actually had fun watching it.
Yeah, good series.
It was much better than I was expecting.
Yeah, you check that one out if you want.
So if you haven't seen that, then we have that up there also. And I think for our $10 and up patrons, we're probably going to do a Google Hangout this weekend, which for our American listeners is the weekend after Thanksgiving. Probably be Saturday, Sunday, whatever.
Time to start cooking up that cornbread.
I know, right?
Because I got to make that cornbread stuff.
Yeah.
And cook a whole turkey and everything.
Yeah, you got to cook the cornbread like several days beforehand, don't you? Because it has to dry out a little bit.
I want to get a pecan pie. I want to get a pumpkin pie.
I want an apple pie too, motherfucker.
Make an apple pie. And I want to make some gravy.
I want all the pie.
I
want
to make homemade cream style corn. You know, you like the cream style corn.
Yeah, it's good.
Real mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Giblet gravy.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm all about that. All about the food.
These people don't know how I cook, man. I keep us fat over here, man. It's a constant war.
It's a constant war.
It's very
hard to keep our girlish figures.
Well, you're the one with the girlish figure. It's all man over here. It's all man.
Yeah, but I'm going to pinch you. Yep, that's all man.
It's
right
all
there.
Man.
But yeah, so Thanksgiving, y'all. So keep a lookout for that. I'll send invitations to everyone that's on the list. And also, if you would, please check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. And if you don't want to give a monthly donation, then you can give a one-time donation through PayPal. And that's, you just go to the blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a little link in the sidebar. Okay, so let's get into the Bloody Benders.
Yeah, I want to hear about this.
Yeah, because you'll love this show. Okay. This is awesome.
That's what you said, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let me set the scene. It's a few years after the Civil War, around 1870.
All right.
Now, the government has just taken the Osage Indians from Kansas and have, essentially booted them off their land.
Right.
They sent them to a new Indian territory, about 50 miles south, I believe, in what is now Oklahoma. So the land that remained empty in Kansas was made available to homesteaders. This is during the westward expansion. And so, if you go, you file a claim. And you didn't really have to do much paperwork. You file a claim, you get some land, you work the land, you can keep it.
Okay.
So around 1870, there are five families and they move into this one area of Kansas. They are spiritualists.
All right.
Okay. This kind of plays a little bit into it. Not much, but
doing seances. They're doing kind of rebooted Christianity.
Yeah.
Right.
This kind of stuff. So these were the five families that moved in around Osage County. And, or Osage Township, rather.
They weren't Mormons,
Lubbock County. No.
They weren't Mormons, all right.
No, they were definitely spiritualists. Okay. One of these families was the Benders. Now, when I say family, you can't see me, but I'm making little ironic air quotes. Because it's not actually known if they were actually a family, in the strictest sense.
Like, they may not have been related DNA-wise.
Right, but okay. I will get to that shortly.
Okay.
So, 1870, the dad... either known as John Bender or Pa, or sometimes as William Bender for whatever reason, him and his quote-unquote son, John Bender Jr., they travel out there, they lay a claim to 160 acres and start setting up a homestead. And then a little bit later, the wife, whose name is either Elvira or Almira, known as Ma, whereas John Bender Sr. was known as Pa. So I'll call them Ma and Pa Bender because that's usually what they're referred to as. So Ma and the daughter, Kate Bender, comes out with her later on. So out here on the Kansas prairie, this is right along the Osage Trail. And this is kind of the main point where families that are heading out west to, you know, set up homesteads, this is kind of the main trail that they all go through. So the Bender family, they set up, you know, a big, like a big one room kind of shack, but, you know, I guess it was a house for the day. And they kind of set it up along the side of the trail, but a little bit off the road. So like you can't really see it from the road, but, you know, it kind of gets around that it's there. Now, what they know about the family, John Bender Sr., who is Pa, he's in his 60s. Evidently, he is a German immigrant or perhaps from Holland. He's real, they said he's a real big guy, kind of a brute of a guy. Didn't really speak English all that well. They said when he did talk, you couldn't really understand what he was saying because he had such a thick accent. Mm-hmm. Kind of kept to himself. Ma Bender, her age estimated anywhere between 42 and 55 years old. She supposedly spoke German and no English, although that might not be the case. And I'll get to that later, too. She was apparently an asshole. Like, really? She was apparently really mean. It got along that she was, like, really mean. They called her a she-devil.
Right.
Things of that nature. Now, the son, John Jr., he was in his mid-20s, about 25, 26, said to be a pretty handsome fella. Mm-hmm. Although they said that he kind of had a tendency to kind of giggle at random times. So they kind of thought maybe he was, you know, special.
Right.
That also might not have been the case. And then there was the daughter, Kate Bender, who was around 22, 23. Now, by most accounts, she was quite a beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. And real flirtatious, real social, real outgoing.
And this is supposed to be the daughter?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Supposedly.
All right.
Now, she was also, she billed herself as a psychic and a healer. She could talk to the dead. She could heal deafness and blindness. She could heal all these diseases. And they still have, there are extant still flyers that she would pass around the area. Mm-hmm. And she gave lectures on spiritualism. She held seances. And so the fact that she billed herself this way and was evidently a really pretty girl, like out on the prairie and stuff. So this kind of encouraged more people to come to this house. Because what this family did was they took their house and they divided it in half with like a canvas curtain, like a wagon cover.
Okay.
So in the back half of the house, they had their living quarters. In the front half of the house, they set up like a little bit of a general store, a little bit of a restaurant. I think they had a bed in there like where travelers could stop and get something to eat and rest before heading out on the trail or whatever. They either called it the Bender Inn or the Wayward Inn or the Bender Tavern or whatever. I've seen it called different things. But it kind of got around that that was there because this was kind of one of the main, you know, there wasn't much on this trail. And there were tons of people like going out west. So that's kind of how that took place there.
So what you're describing is kind of like a pretty much makeshift little lodge slash inn.
Yeah.
It was really just a house.
Yeah. It was essentially like a rest stop.
Right.
There are photographs of the house
that
were taken at the time. It's not tiny, but it's not real big either.
What kind of, you're not talking about a log cabin. This is a real house.
No, it's a wood frame cabin pretty much. It's just like made of wood. It's just like rectangular house. And it's just they have
one room.
Maybe. Yeah, that was divided in half with a piece of canvas.
Okay.
Right. So that was dividing the front from the back. You know, also on this land, the mother and daughter had also planted a 2-acre vegetable garden. There was an orchard. They had a barn there. They had a corral. So like when people stopped, they could, you know, put their animals up and things like that. Now, everything, no one kind of suspected anything about them at first. The elder Benders, Ma and Pa, they were kind of crabby and they kind of kept to themselves, evidently. But the son and the daughter would often go to Sunday school and apparently they were pretty social and stuff like that. Now, there were rumors in the community that these two were not brother and sister, but were husband and wife.
Okay.
No one is quite sure how true that is. But they said, you know, contemporary reports at the time said, well, they acted more like husband and wife. Well, there's no records of their marriage, but it could have been common law.
Yeah, that's the way it was back then.
Yeah. So, you know, so who knows? But now, they're saying they didn't really act like brother and sister.
Okay. Now, why would a couple have adopted another couple?
Well,
or were they both? Were they both brother and sister and man and wife?
That could be too, but I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
Because, okay, here's where it, like I said, no one knows for sure. they suspect that the only ones that were actually related were Ma Bender and Kate, the daughter. They said that that actually was her daughter.
Okay.
Okay. Now, they don't know if Ma and Pa Bender were actually married or even if Bender was their real name.
Okay. Now, why are they not knowing? I know there isn't any records, but why are they suspecting that they weren't married?
Okay.
Something's going on here in this case.
Well, after the crimes and shit occurred, like I was going to get to this later, but right. After the crimes and stuff occurred, it came to light that they found like a Bible in the cabin, in the house. And, you know, people used to keep their family records like in the Bible and stuff like that. Okay. Now there was, they like had a little
genealogy and in the back.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Now they had written in the Bible the birth of the daughter.
Okay.
Although she had kind of a different name, but they're kind of thinking it was maybe the same chick.
Okay.
The son, quote unquote, was actually listed as John Gebhardt, and it said came to America July 18 something something. So I don't think that he was actually their son. I think
maybe
he
might son-in-law.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It might have been son-in-law.
Right.
And like I said, I don't know if Ma and Pa Bender were actually married. Now, the rumors at the time were that Ma Bender had actually, that was not really her name. She was actually Almira Hill. She was born, and she was born in the U.S. She wasn't born in Germany. They think John Bender might have been born in Germany.
Right.
But the woman wasn't. So she was kind of going under a different name. Now, they think, they've looked through like marriage records and stuff like that. Evidently, she was married a bunch of other times.
Yeah, that's why.
And her husbands died mysteriously.
Okay. So Ma Bender was a suspected poisoner, serial poisoner.
Well, not poisoner. Right. They died of head wounds.
Oh, head wounds. Okay. All right.
That's the story.
So that's just straight up serial killer, maybe.
Yeah, so that's the story.
Black Widow.
She pretty might have been much, a
Black Widow.
Okay. Okay. So the trouble starts to arise in about the late spring of 1871. And there's a body found. The man was just named Mr. Jones. I don't know what his first name is. None of the sources say. So he was found in Drum Creek, which was rather near the farm. And his skull was crushed and his throat was cut. Now, initially, no one suspected the Benders. They actually suspected the guy who had made the claim on the land that was right by Drum Creek. But it was never, nothing was really done about it. And a few months later, in like winter of 1872, they found two more bodies. These two men were not identified. They just kind of found them laying or, you know, buried in the prairie. And they had the same injuries, head bashed in, throats cut. So like I said, these two men were not identified. Now, you might think, oh, it's murders and stuff like that. And they didn't really pursue it, though, because you have to think this is the Western expansion. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people traveling on this trail, going out, you know, to set up their homestead out west on all their new land claims. So these are families. They have all of their money, all of their worldly possessions on them. So you've got highwaymen robbing these people.
Yeah.
You have the people getting lost in the mountains and starving to death. Yeah. You have Indian attacks, things like that. So it wasn't that weird for people to turn up dead or to go missing or anything like that. So it's like they didn't make a huge deal about it.
Right.
In some ways, that's kind of why the Benders got away with what they did for so long, because a lot of the people, no one missed them or like no one reported them missing.
Yeah. And if you're not an American, you got to imagine this. The whole Wild West and Western expansion period of the United States is like an apocalyptic Mad Max type situation going on. There is no law and order.
There aren't nothing.
There aren't even really states. They're just territories. There's no government.
Well, there were no. Yeah, these, the you know, when they sent them out, like I said, when they sent the Indians to the new Indian territory, which is now Oklahoma, it wasn't even Oklahoma yet.
Yeah.
You know, and there was no state line there.
Yeah. And contrary to what you see in the Wild West movies, the towns were a lot safer than portrayed in those movies. Also. Yeah. It was just out on the trail.
Yeah.
You didn't know what could happen.
Because like I said, and particularly during the westward expansion, I mean, obviously criminals are going to take advantage of the fact that there's tons of people going out west with all their shit, all their horses, all their money, all their stuff. It's like, of course, people are going to attack them and take all their stuff.
Yeah. But usually when they got into a town, it was pretty safe.
Yeah.
They had sheriffs and you had to check your pistols and things like that.
But like I said,
it's not like you see in the movies where they actually had hookers in the saloon and gunfights in the saloon. Actually, the saloons were men only. The hookers were in the brothels.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to take guns into a bar. That was, you know, that was just the
way. Well, that's just smart. That's just a smart idea. Yeah. Drunk people and guns do not mix.
And most of the gunfights had nothing to do with gunfighters. It was just drunk guys. And it wouldn't, no high noon either. It was just shooting people in the back.
Well, yeah, that's the easiest way.
Shooting people in the back because you were
Why would you want to, like, make this fist, all the trouble?
Yeah. Fist fight and break out and somebody gets shot in the back.
Right. So, like I'm saying, it was a while before anyone really twigged to the fact that anything was going on. Right. Okay, so one of the first things that kind of led to the discovery, it was winter of 1872, and there's this guy named George Longcore or Launcher or Lonker. It's, you know, there's different spellings. His wife died, and he took his infant daughter, I believe his daughter was 18 months old, and he was going to take her out to Iowa, which is where his parents lived. And he was going to, you know, start a new life after the death of his wife. So he packs up the baby and he packs up all the stuff and heads out to Iowa. And he never returns. Hmm. Now, it so happened that before he left, he had bought horses and a carriage and stuff like that from a good friend of his who was also his neighbor. And his neighbor's name was Dr. William Henry York.
Hmm.
Now, William Henry York got very upset and wondered what had happened to this man and his baby. So he said, well, I'm going to go find him. So he heads out along the trail because, you know, it was the Osage Trail. Everybody went that way. So he knew where he was going. Okay. So Dr. York gets to Fort Scott and he's coming back to Independence, Kansas, which is where he was from. He never makes it home.
Hmm.
So he went to look for the guy with the baby. He doesn't come home either.
Okay.
At this point, it transpires that Dr. York had two very powerful brothers. One of them was a colonel in the military and one was a Kansas state senator. So obviously they're like, okay, well, we have to find out where this guy went. And at this stage too, it should be said this year and a little bit into the later year, there had been like a lot of rumors of like, man, a lot of people are going missing at this in this one area of the Osage Trail. And isn't that strange? So there had been rumors circulating that there were an unusual number of disappearances.
Yeah.
So the one brother, Colonel Ed York, he says, well, I'm going to go and find my brother. So Colonel York, he's got 50 guys and he's going to go and go all along the trail because he knew where his brother was going. And he's like, I'm going to question all these people and everything like that. So Colonel York, in March of 1873, he arrives at the Bender's Inn.
Okay.
And he says, I'm looking for my brother, Dr. York. Have you seen him? And the Benders were like, oh, yeah, he did stay here for a night. Maybe the Indians got him. You know, so Colonel York's like, you know, fair enough. Right. It did happen. So it wasn't crazy or anything like that. So Colonel York is like, okay, fine. And he stays at the inn for dinner. And then he's kind of still hanging around the town. Now, a couple of days later, he receives wind that a woman who was staying at the inn kind of came crying to like the trustees or whoever. They're like, Ma Bender drew a knife on me and was acting all crazy and shit like that. At which point Colonel York goes, huh, maybe these people had something to do with some of these disappearances.
Right.
So they go to question Ma Bender about this situation.
Yeah.
Now, John Jr., the son, he says, oh, that woman was here and she was being an asshole. She's a witch and all this other kind of stuff. And my mom was just trying to get rid of her. And at this stage, now, like I said, everyone thought that Ma Bender couldn't speak English.
Right.
But she got mad and she said, the woman was a witch. She cursed my coffee. So I was trying to get rid of her and all this other stuff. And they're like, oh, she really does speak English.
Cursed her coffee.
Yeah. And she understood English just fine. So again, these people are not what they seem.
Right.
All right. So at that stage, like I said, York is suspicious and all this other stuff. And then at this point, Kate says, hey, you know, Colonel York, why don't you come back to the house by yourself on Friday night? And I'll use my psychic abilities to tell you where your brother is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think Colonel York is kind of like, no.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that sounds a little fishy. So the men, because, you know, York had a bunch of men with him. And the men were like, I think this family is up to something. These people and like some neighbors that they had too. He's like, I think they might be in on it. Let's lynch them.
Whoa.
And so York was kind of like, no, we can't do that. We don't have enough evidence or anything like that. Now, because of all the disappearances and shit like that in the area, like some of the people around in the town had started to think that, oh, well, maybe the Indians were killing all these people off. So they got together like a committee meeting and they were going to talk about it. Now, Colonel York was at this meeting. Pa Bender was also at this meeting, as was John Jr. So they all start talking about, you know, the disappearances and where's everyone going and stuff like that. And the trustees come up with a plan. They're like, yo, well, you know what we're going to do? We are going to search every homestead in this area and see if we can find out where these people went. Now, as I said before, Pa Bender and John Jr. were at this meeting. So after the meeting's over, everyone kind of lost track of the Benders. No one was watching them.
Right.
3 days later, someone is driving by the house, the Bender Inn, and noticed that it is abandoned. He's like, there are still animals that are starving outside. Like, all their shit is gone.
Right.
So now everybody starts to get really suspicious. They're right. Like, well, we're going to go search this homestead. And now, since it's right at the halfway point, when we get back from the break, I'll tell you what they found in there. Okay. All right. So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
There are terrors, real and imaginary. And I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction. Horror fiction. The Rochdale Poltergeist. The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Associated Full Monsters. Red Menace. The Five Tenebrae Poisons. Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
The Unseen Hand. A New Exploration of Poltergeist Phenomena by Jenny Ashford. Author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Hinter Kaifeck Farm, The Axeman of New Orleans, The Cleveland Torso Murder, Who Put Bella in the Witch Hour, The Solder Children, The Phantom Killer, The Black Dahlia, Somerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
So now we're back from the break. So the guy drives past and notices that the cabin is abandoned, right? So he says, okay, well, we need to search it. Now, it so happened that a couple days after that, like, the weather was really shitty. It didn't really say what the weather was. I don't know if it was a tornado or a snowstorm, or I don't know what it was. But so they couldn't search the house for a few more days.
Okay.
They call for volunteers. They get like 100 dudes.
Right.
And they come out to search the house. Now, they go in the house. All the food and personal possessions and stuff like that are gone. But it smells really bad in there.
All right.
So as they're searching, they find...
And it didn't smell bad before.
Not that anyone ever said.
All right.
So they find a little trapdoor underneath the bed in the living quarters. It's nailed shut.
Okay.
That's where the smell is coming
from. Oh, shit. Here we go.
Well, they pry open the trapdoor, and there is like a very, very small cellar. It's about, I think it's 6 feet deep, 7 feet square.
All right.
Yeah. With a little stone bottom.
Right.
At the bottom is covered with clotted blood.
Huh.
So the guys are kind of like, okay, well, we got to figure out. So they go down to the bottom, they chip through all the stone and start digging around down there. They don't find anything. The smell is from the blood that seeped into the dirt underneath. So okay, they're like,
now, back up. Now, this little cellar is where the Benders actually lived behind that curtain.
Yeah.
So it's in their living area.
Well, a little, it's a little bit behind, like if you look at there are actually little sketches drawn of like how the layout of the place was.
Yeah.
The trapdoor is kind of like a couple of feet behind where the curtain was. So okay. It was in their living quarters. Yeah. So you couldn't see it from right. the front part, but it wasn't that far okay. behind there. It was just weird. A couple feet behind there.
So basically they lived on top of this trap door.
Yeah. So then the guys were like, okay, well, there were no bodies down there. So basically all the guys picked up the cabin
yeah.
and moved it over.
Okay. Yeah.
And then dug around all in there. They didn't find any bodies in there either. Hmm. But then some of the neighbors were kind of like, you know, the land and the, you know, the vegetable garden and the orchard, that land always seemed like it was freshly plowed. Maybe we should go check that out.
Right.
So some of them had like metal rods and stuff. So they start poking them into the dirt.
Yeah.
Almost immediately, they find the body of Dr. York.
Damn.
He wasn't even buried that deep. Like his feet were only a couple inches under the dirt.
Right.
Head bashed in.
Yeah.
Throat cut.
Man.
So they found him. Now, all that, you know, they searched all that evening until it got dark, and they found 9 more places that they thought also might be graves.
Right.
And they said, okay, we got to check these in the morning. The next day, when they dig around, they find 8 more.
Damn. Total of 9 so far.
Yeah, so far. They also found 1 in the well.
That's 10.
Well, see, like I said, yeah. they don't know how many people okay. these people killed.
They threw a body into their own well, under their own drinking water?
I don't know. I was just saying they found a body well. In the well.
It maybe it was been. A dry well.
Yeah, it might have been.
But you don't yeah. throw a body into your own drinking water.
Well, unless you're stupid.
You're right. Well, you'd get sick.
Well, yeah. So pretty much all these bodies, same thing. Head bashed in, throats cut. They did find the body of Mr. Longcore and the baby daughter. Okay. The baby daughter, her head wasn't bashed in, but they think they might have just that she was just suffocated by her dad's body. Like they just buried her alive. Underneath. Yeah, they just buried her alive. They also found another body that they think was like a little girl.
Yeah.
She didn't have any injuries on her either. So they thought maybe she was buried alive or maybe suffocated, strangled, something like that. They also found a shitload of body parts.
Okay.
Aside from the entire bodies they found and the body parts, which didn't match any of the bodies that they found, they're thinking 20, 21
damn.
People at least.
Hmm.
Like I said, and they don't know if Ma Bender like killed some people before that also, because some of her husbands were rumored to turn up dead also.
Right.
Obviously, all the people that were searching this place were super pissed off. And they went over to this other German immigrant named Brockman, who was apparently a friend of the Benders.
Right.
And they put a rope around his neck and hung him from a beam.
Damn.
And started like interrogating him, like asking him what he knew and stuff like that. He's like, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. Right. So then they let him down and then they put him up again. They did it like 3 times. They were like trying to torture a confession out of him.
Right.
But evidently they couldn't get anything out of him. Don't feel too bad for him, though, because he was a piece of shit, as I will get into later.
Okay.
But so while they were in there, like I said, they found the Bible that led them to suspect that these people were not really related or were not a family in the strictest
Some
sense.
Some kind of a crime family.
Right. So like I said, in the Bible, it said things like the girl that was born, who we're assuming is Kate Bender, was actually born Johanna Bender, born in 1848. And then John Jr., who was supposedly their son. Actually, there was something in there that said John Gebhardt came to America on July 1st, 18 whatever year.
Now, are they really sure that's their Bible? That's not a Bible.
Well, it was found in their house.
They could have just got that off of someone they killed.
True.
Did they do it like a handwriting comparison?
Well, I don't know about that.
I bet you that was just a Bible.
I'm just saying it was a Bible that was found in their possession. There was also a transcript in it that said Big Slaughter Day, January 8th.
Okay.
And one that said, Hell Departed.
All right.
Which I don't know what that means.
Right.
All right. So after that, I mean, this was like huge news. Like people, like reporters came from everywhere and like checking this place out. The cabin and everything on the land was completely dismantled by souvenir hunters. Because that's what people did back in the day.
Yeah.
They just came and took rocks. Well, look, I got a rock from the well and I got a wood from the house and all this other shit. So nothing remained.
Right.
And actually, even nowadays, there's nothing there. It's just like a big flat prairie. So this family, quote unquote, are multiple murderers and we have to find them.
Right.
Because they have no idea where they went to.
Right.
So they start following the trail. They found their abandoned wagon about 12 miles away.
Hmm.
And all the horses were starving and stuff like that.
Oh, the horses were with the wagon?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they had all got in it. Now, they found it in the town of Thayer. They think what happened is that the family went so far as Thayer, which was 12 miles. They left their wagon. And at that point, they think that the family bought train tickets and headed for a town called Humboldt. Now, when they got to a town called Chanute, I think that's how you pronounce it, the two kids, quote unquote, John Jr. and Kate, took another train and they went south to Texas. Now, they were thinking that those two went to, there was like kind of an outlaw county or like an outlaw town on the border between Texas and New Mexico.
Okay. Yeah.
And they think that's where those two went, but no one would follow them because they said every time like police or sheriffs or whatever go to follow somebody to this outlaw territory, they don't come back.
All right. Okay.
So they don't know.
Place, yeah.
Yeah. So they don't know if that's where they went, but that's what they were speculating because they did head on a train headed south. So they didn't go after them. Ma and Pa, they apparently stayed on the train until they got to St. Louis and then they were lost track of. Now, later, when all the shit about the family came out, they, you know, other witnesses who had actually survived, you know, who had actually stayed in the inn and had bad things happen to them, but survived, kind of came forward and started talking about the story. So this is what the family would do. They would basically, they didn't pick on everybody because apparently a lot of people stayed there. It was kind of the only place in this area. But when they had the target individual, they would get Kate to kind of distract them, like flirt with them and read their fortunes and all that kind of stuff. And they would make them dinner. They would say, you know, sit at the table and sit at the place of honor is what they called it.
Right.
And it was the chair that was directly in front of the canvas.
Right.
You know,
so they could slip out thing. From behind that thing.
Yeah. So they said it was so close. And if you see the diagram, it was so close that your head was kind of touching the canvas when you sat down at the table. So Kate would be talking to them and stuff like that. And either Pa Bender or John Jr. would come up behind the canvas and hit the person with a sledgehammer in the side of the skull.
Damn.
They would fall off the chair. One of the women, either Ma or Kate, would then slash their throats to make sure they were dead.
Damn.
They would drag them to the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
They would throw them down in the trapdoor, which was only a few feet away. And then later on, they would kind of clean up. They would strip them of whatever they had.
Yeah.
And then they would bury them out in the orchard or in the garden.
Huh.
The strange thing, though, is that even though they did steal all these people's stuff.
You're right.
Some of the people that they robbed from didn't really have anything.
That's what I was thinking.
Or didn't have much of anything.
That's what I was thinking. Why are they going?
Yeah, it didn't seem like they specifically targeted people. Like, they took their money. They took their stuff, if they had any stuff.
They must have been doing this for pennies, because look at them. They weren't wealthy.
No.
You know?
So I think most sources I read speculated that, yeah, they were profiting from it a little bit, but they were just doing it because they liked it.
Yeah.
It must have been. Because they said they really didn't get a huge amount of financial gain. And actually, if you look, and I think Wikipedia has like a list of all the victims and how much money they supposedly had on them. Like, once, like, some of them had a significant amount because they were heading out west to set up a new homestead or whatever. But some of them only had a few dollars or didn't really have
much stuff.
Were
there any signs of cannibalism?
Not that I ever saw.
So they weren't getting a meal out of it.
No, it's you know. Now, some of the newspapers, some of the contemporary newspaper reports said that the bodies, some of the bodies had been quote unquote indecently mutilated. So I'm not entirely sure what the connotation of that is.
Maybe it just meant cutting to pieces.
That's what I mean. They might have just been cut up because they did find body parts that didn't match any of
the
bodies.
Make them easier to transport.
Yeah. So maybe they were just like cutting them up to go. Because I don't think they weren't like raping them. They weren't like, they were just taking their shit and just burying them in the garden.
That's
like
weird that they'd kill an adult that was accompanied with a child. That's kind of cold blooded.
Yeah. And like I said, one of the other bodies was like a young girl, too.
Yeah. Maybe that particular victim, the father or whatever, had money.
It could be. But yeah, so later on, it came to light that some people that had stayed there, you know, had some kind of stories about it. You know, they thought it was weird at the time, but, you know, they're not going to report right. it because they didn't know they were murderers. But then, like, afterward, they came forward and like, oh, well, that explains that. You know what I mean?
What kind of things? What kind of
It was just kind of like, okay, so here's this one guy, and his name is William Pickering. Mm-hmm. And he stopped at the inn, and he was going to eat and stuff like that. And they told him, hey, you know, sit at the seat of honor and stuff. And he's like, and I didn't really want to because right. he's like, it had kind of stains on it, and it was kind of dirty.
Right.
So he didn't want to sit there. And he's like, at which point? Kate Bender started threatening him with a knife. Like, she got really mad.
Yeah, you better sit over
there. You better sit over there, and like, with a knife. So he was like, yeah, I'm out of here. And he got the fuck out. And there was also a priest that stayed there.
Yeah.
And he said that he had seen the dad and the son, like, kind of coming out from behind the canvas with hammers, and he fucking took off.
Right.
So, you know, he probably would have got bashed if he'd stayed there.
Right.
And the same thing happened to two guys who stayed there, and they said they didn't want to eat dinner at the table. They wanted to eat at the shop counter.
Right.
At which point the mom and Kate got really, really pissed off at them. And
right.
then the two guys came out from behind the canvas with a hammer and stuff. And so they took the fuck off too.
They saw the trap.
So they were just like, you know, and like I said, they probably didn't report it at the time because it's like, yeah, that was scary, but they didn't really think anything was going to happen to them, I guess. So, but you know, after the shit about the murders came out, then they were like, oh, well, okay.
They had to make a movie about this and Krussel is in it. Krussel blows the whole lid off this, like something out of Hateful Eight.
That's what I was saying. It would be weird. And like I said, they did make a movie about it last year. I haven't seen it yet, but I did see the trailer. Now, they also said that the cabin had several bullet holes in the roof and the walls and stuff. So they don't know if, like, when some people got hit, like, they didn't get knocked out and they were trying to shoot their way out, like, trying to defend themselves, you know, but evidently that wasn't the case in most of the time, because most of them ended up getting killed. Now, the weird thing about the end of the Benders is that no one is ever really sure what happened to them.
They just vanished.
Afterward, they pretty much just vanished.
Weird.
Because they were so famous, and because there was like a huge reward out, like for their capture, I think it was $3,000, which in today's money would be like 60 grand. So there were a bunch of people that came forward and said, and you know, this wasn't like a lot of people didn't know what they looked like.
Right.
You know, there were some tin types of them. There were like, you know, shit like that, but there wasn't like a lot of photographs of
them. Back in those days, it was easy to vanish.
Right.
I'll tell you what they did is that they just sold whatever they had or divided up anything that they had, the money and everything, possessions, and they all split up.
Yeah.
That'd make it. Well, they know for sure
that the two quote unquote kids and the two quote unquote parents, that they did split up at some point. Okay, so
I think they all ended up being individuals eventually.
Yeah.
I think they all went.
Because like I said, I think they speculate that the only ones that were actually related were Ma Bender and Kate. They said they actually do think they were mother and daughter for real.
Yeah.
But the other ones, they're not really sure. So, yeah. So there were like all these rumors going around. Like,
and
a bunch
of all assumed names. I bet you that those were not their names.
No, they don't think that those were their names. You know, there were all these vigilante groups that kind of formed that were looking for them and things like that. And a bunch of the groups kind of came forward and be like, yeah, we got those motherfuckers and shit like that. Like, you know, one group said that they had lynched them.
Yeah.
One group said, oh, well, we shot all of them except for Kate. We burned her alive. Yeah. You know, we threw them in this river. We killed them all and buried them on the prairie and shit like that. But, you know, nobody ever had proof. Nobody ever, you know, like I said, there was a big reward. No one ever claimed it.
Right.
So no one had enough proof.
Nah, they got away.
To do. Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking they got away. The thing is that over the ensuing years, because the murders were so heinous and because, you know, because they were so infamous, pretty much, I mean, people kept looking for them, like for many decades afterward. Right. And there were a lot of kind of, you know, legend and folklore kind of grew up surrounding them. Now, there was some speculation that Pa Bender, that he might have been, like, his real identity might have been John Flickinger or Flickinger. No one knows for sure, but some people think that that's what his birth name was and that he was actually born in Germany. Now, a man named John Flickinger did commit suicide in Michigan in 1884, but they're not sure if that's who it was. Now, that same year, though, it should be noted that a man was arrested in Montana, and this man looked a lot like the description of Pa Bender. This man was arrested for a murder he had committed in Idaho, in which he had killed a victim by hitting him in the head with a hammer.
Mm.
So they arrested this guy, and they're thinking, okay, well, maybe this is Pa Bender. So they sent word back to the town of Cherryvale in Kansas, which is right around where the house was, and said, can you send someone out here to identify this guy? We think it might be Pa Bender. So before that could take place, because obviously shit took a long time back then, this man cut his own foot off to get out of the leg irons.
Damn.
And bled to death.
Damn.
So by the time that a guy got there from Cherryvale, they said the body was so decomposed that they couldn't tell who the fuck it was. Was that Pa Bender? Who knows? That does seem weird that he killed the guy by hitting him in the head with a hammer, because that's definitely the dad's M.O.
But he still had motive to run, because he was probably facing the gallows.
Right. So actually, whether or not that was John Bender, no one knows. Yeah. They actually said that after he died, a local saloon stole the skull and displayed it as Pa Bender's skull for many years until it disappeared. No one knows where it is now. Now, as remember when I said before how they kind of lynched that Brockman guy that was a neighbor?
Yeah.
Okay, well, later on, it came to light that the Benders probably had help from, like, neighbors and other people in the area. Because I think it was at least 12 or 13 people that were around the area that were also indicted kind of as co-conspirators.
How'd that happen?
Some of them actually helped the Benders get rid of stolen goods.
What?
From the bodies and things like that. One of these people had evidently forged a letter from one of the people they killed, a letter back to his wife saying, hey, I got here and I'm fine and stuff like that.
So there were many accomplices.
So, yeah, it does seem to be the case.
Right.
And this this Brockman fellow also was kind of in on it, but like helping to dispose of stolen goods and stuff like that. Incidentally, a couple of decades later, the Brockman guy, you know, the guy that was lynched or whatever, he would actually be convicted for raping and murdering his own daughter.
Damn.
So, you know, like I said, don't feel too bad for him.
Okay.
You know, so, and a couple of years after that, about 5 years after that, a woman, an older woman and a younger woman were captured in Michigan for theft, larceny. Mm. And there was some speculation that this might be Ma Bender and Kate Bender.
Hmm.
The reason that they thought this was because the daughter of one of the victims evidently had had a dream about her father getting murdered by the Benders and stuff like that. Because, I mean, her father was one of the bodies that they found. And she had gone looking for them.
Right.
And she figured that she had tracked these people down. Now, these two women were going by a bunch of different aliases. The older woman was Mrs. Almira Monroe, and the younger woman was Mrs. Sarah Eliza Davis. Now, it should be noted that Kate Bender, they think, might have been born Sarah Eliza or might have been born Johanna. Like I said, I'm not super sure. And also, they think that Ma Bender might have had 12 children.
Damn.
One of which was also named Sarah. So they could have been sisters. Who knows? And actually, when these two got captured, the younger woman said, oh, I'm not Kate Bender. I'm her sister, Sarah.
Right.
But that totally is Ma Bender.
Wow.
The older woman said, I'm not Ma Bender, but that's totally Kate Bender. You know what I mean? They kind of narked on each other. Now, there was kind of a lot of complication about, I mean, they were let go for the larceny charge, but then they got rearrested for being, because they thought they were the Benders. And they did get some people to go, yeah, that's them. And then other people were like, no, that's not them. Like, they had tintype photographs of them, and some people thought that that's who it was. But there was really never enough evidence to really conclusively say whether that was them or not. And they ended up having to let them go.
Hmm.
So whether that was them, I don't know. So it might have been.
Probably.
But like I said.
Sounds like it could have been.
Yeah.
Although I don't know all the details.
Yeah. Like I said, it's like it's this big, huge, like complex sort of shit about this case. But it's just this shit is so crazy. And they said the scary thing, too, is that other than a few of the victims that were identified and, you know, were taken back by their families and stuff like that, most of the victims' bodies were not claimed.
Right.
So actually, they were just buried. They knew who they were, but no one came to claim them. So there's actually still a burial ground that, as far as I know, it's still there, called the Benders Mounds, where they buried some of these victims. And, when they searched the cabin too, later on, they found, the hammers, that they had used, and they matched the indentations on the skulls. Those hammers are now in a museum in Cherryvale, the Bender Museum. And they also found a knife that still had blood on it, which was presumably the one they used to cut their throats. That's also in the museum collection, but you can only look at it.
You know what this reminds me of?
What's that?
This reminds me of a Thuggee cult.
Yeah.
You know how that they would kill travelers?
Yeah.
And it's, what it looks like to me is that along this trail, they had a band of criminals formed there.
Yeah.
That basically vampirized the travelers as they went through their town. They tried to make it like the town industry.
Yeah. You know,
because the benders were killing them. And then they were using other people in the town to get rid of all the loot, the stolen loot. But it wasn't enough to really make a lot of profit off of. It was just like a real, you know, low budget operation. Kind of speaks to the desperation of the people of the town. You know, they were pretty low. You know, I wouldn't say maybe desperation, but just, you know, the low quality of the people in the town, you know, scumbags probably.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Thuggee cultists were scumbags.
Yeah.
They just used religion to justify, you know, killing people and stealing what little that they had.
The weirdest thing about this to me, it's like, well, okay, I guess I said before, it's like, oh, they weren't technically a family, but I guess if the daughter and the son were married or were common law marriage, and then the mom was actually the mom of Kate Bender, then yeah, I guess they kind of were a family of some sort. It just seems weird how, I mean, whose idea was this? How long have they been doing this?
Some kind of weird synergy built up between them.
That's what I mean. That's what fascinates me about it. It's like, you know, single serial killers are bad enough.
Yeah.
And then I'm always kind of fascinated too by ones that like get a buddy, like to do it with them. Like, you know, we did the show about Leonard Lake and Charles Ng and, you know, fucking Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole.
Yeah.
Like,
although I'm not sure they were serial killers, those two.
Yeah.
Because a lot of their shit was lies.
Well, yeah.
Fake news.
Too. Well, I'm just saying that
they killed some people, but I don't think they
killed. Or, you know, even ones where it's like couples like Brady and Hindley.
Yeah, that's the one that disturbs me.
It's Fred and Rosemary West and stuff like that.
Man and women couple, you know, male and female couples going out killing little girls and weird shit like
that. Yeah, that's totally bizarre to me. But then the fact that you could get like a family to go along with it. Because like I said, they were doing it for a profit motive, I guess, but it doesn't really seem like the main motive, though.
Well, you know, it was Victorian era, and that has the profile of the Victorian era.
Yeah.
Crime families.
Yeah.
You know, like they'd have like a little mini mafia set up.
Yeah.
Running through a business with neighbors helping, and sometimes, you know, like the demon, what was the demon barber of
Fleet Street.
Fleet Street, you know, cannibalism was involved, too, with that one. You know,
the good old days.
Victorian era was, you know, they were nuts.
I kind of feel like that.
You could commit a lot of crimes and get away with it. Law enforcement wasn't any good.
Yeah.
And I think maybe like people don't realize how polluted the environment was at that time. You know, there were a lot of heavy metals and lead and mercury and.
Well, and people didn't live very long. They were all in very ill health.
Yeah, and I don't.
The water was dirty. The air was dirty.
And I think it, you know, mercury and lead can play hell on the human brain.
Oh,
you know, and they start getting aggressive and crazy, mad as a hatter. You know, came from that area.
Yep, that's right.
And I think that had a lot to do with it. You know,
yeah.
And evidently, the same with ancient Rome. Ancient Rome had real bizarre behavior, and they had a lot of mercury and lead and lead in their diet. I don't think mercury so much, but lead.
It's funny. I was just, I think I talked about this a little bit when I was on the Conspiranormal show, because I was talking about, I'm fascinated by all true crime, especially unsolved ones, but I'm especially fascinated with old crimes, especially Victorian era or, you know, Old West type stuff, you know, stuff that's like pre-1950, just because people tend to have a misperception of the past.
Right.
As they tend to see it in a rosy sort of light. Like, oh, it was so much better back then.
Yeah, they also think it was clean and it wasn't.
No way.
Toxic waste.
You guys, I can't recommend enough this book. Its book is called The Ghost Map.
Yeah.
And it's basically about how they figured out that germs in water cause diseases.
Right.
It's set in, in London.
They knew nothing.
And it's about a cholera outbreak in London.
People don't realize that the toxic wastes and the filth that came from leather tanneries, and leather tanneries were everywhere. And they might be right next door to a butcher shop or something selling food. And they were using human urine and feces and all kinds of weird toxic mixtures that involved lead and
that's
and,
what I mean. There mercury. Was no.
And then it would go right into the drinking water.
Yeah, there was no regulation. No. There was no conception. that was bad for you, really. I don't think they even really made that association. It doesn't seem like. I mean, I think some people did.
Right.
Like I said, but look how long it was. It was like the late 1800s before they figured out that drinking shit in water will give you cholera.
Oh, yeah.
It took forever for them to figure that out. Yeah. They thought it was the air. They thought it was like miasma or something like that.
There were lots and lots of birth defects and lots of mental problems from coming from damn toxic waste.
Yeah.
You know.
So maybe.
I can remember when I was a little kid living in California, in New York, excuse me, in the Los Angeles basin. I can remember smog choking me in my eyes.
I remember
eyes
seeing videos.
And coughing like crazy as a little kid.
The smog was bad in the 70s.
Yeah. The adults were immune to it. But little kids would gag and, you know, my esophagus would be raw from coughing up smog.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the cars were burning leaded fuel, so there's little lead particles everywhere. Who knows how many IQ points I lost?
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't that many.
leaded fuel had a lot to do with it, especially if you were in a dense area. But I think that had a lot to do with the weird crimes that you saw in the 60s and the 70s.
Lead content. Might have been. Because, I mean,
cars were just lead machines.
Yeah.
They were just pumping lead out everywhere.
Oh, it's fine.
No catalytic converters.
Yeah.
You know, so there was carbon.
And I think
there
was
gases.
A similar kind of thing. There's maybe that might have partially explained all the weird shit that went on in the Victorian era and all this kind of stuff. Because, I mean, you see fucked up shit nowadays.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like it was more fucked up back then. I don't know if that's incorrect.
This was happening along a trail, you know.
Yeah.
But those people probably came from highly populated areas.
Yeah.
A lot of brain damage. And then, you know, they were just dumb, too. They were not educated well. There was you know, inbreeding going on in certain areas.
Yeah.
I saw a thing about inbreeding in the modern era. There was some, like a group of trailers, three or four trailers out in the middle of nowhere, and they were just dilapidated. They were off the grid, no power. And like, there were little kids running around, and the adults were having sex with the kids, and the adults were all brother and sister, and their parents were brothers and sisters, and all the, you know, you talk about family trees that didn't have any branches on it.
Yeah.
They had to go in there and condemn the whole place and institutionalize all the adults and all the children to stop it. It had been going on for like four or five generations.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I kind of wonder in the Bender family if those two actually were brother and sister and also husband and wife.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though. But like I said, they don't really, the only record they have of that guy was that his name was John Gebhardt and that he came to America in July of whatever year. So they assumed that he wasn't related.
Right.
But, you know, he might have been. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows if any of them related? But yeah, this is like a fucked up story. And I'm like really surprised that it's not better known. And I mean, it's not just me. Like I said, I'd heard of it. I just didn't really know the details, but I've seen people like comments on various, shows about them and stuff like that. It's like, man, I'm super into true crime and I never heard of this ever.
Yeah.
And and it's just, it kills me that it's not better known, especially since later on, you know, they made the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is kind of similar. And I feel like it's sort of based on this and that kind of stuff about a whole murderous family. So I'm just surprised that it's not better known and that it took this long for them to make a movie about it.
And that was probably kind of common. There's probably lots of that going on. They just never
That's what I mean. That's what kind of bothers me is that, you know, they were at it for so long.
Yeah.
And it took so long for them to get caught. It's like, how many more people were like, do you remember? It's kind of like when we did that show about the Villisca axe murders.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, right around that time, there was a shit ton of different, like just whole families being slaughtered with an axe by some random motherfucker.
Yeah.
And they never caught the person or people. It's like, who knows how many of those people were running around doing that shit.
There was something I read. I don't even remember when I read it, but they tore down a house from the Victorian period. I don't even remember where it was. It was just kind of in the middle of nowhere here in the United States. And they found underneath that house, you know, close to 100 bodies. And they were from a long time ago. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they were from the 1800s. And there no records exist. No records really exist of, you know, who it was, who owned the house. And no surviving newspapers from the area, you know, reported people missing. They don't know what it was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Looking back in the day. And like I said, when the whole shit with the Bender family is that, you know, people went missing off that trail all the time.
Right.
You know, they got lost. They got attacked by Indians. They got attacked by highwaymen, whatever. it was almost like an expectation that, like, well, there's probably a 75% chance you're not coming back. You know what I mean?
It was dangerous back then.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was a lot more dangerous. So, and it was a lot more easier to get away with shit also.
Oh, yeah. They just got away with shit automatically.
Well, yeah. We said this on the H.H. Holmes show, too. You could just pretty much move to another state and change your name and everybody like, oh, fair enough.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, you really
could. If you wanted to start over, just move.
Yeah, that's all you had to do.
Yep.
All right, so that'll do it for this episode 66 about the Bloody Benders. As always, if you're interested in true crime in general, please pick up my latest book, The Faceless Villain, which is available on Amazon. The audiobook will be available in a few weeks, I promise.
Yeah.
Also, check out our page on Patreon, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. And if you would like to give a monthly donation, if you would rather just give a one-time donation through PayPal, then go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar. Also, check out our latest movie review/TV review, which was the Logan's Run TV series from 1977, if you haven't checked it out already. And that'll do it for the show, and we will see you next Tuesday. Bye. The Benders were family, right in Lubbock County, Kansas, around 1870. Then the Bender family built a one-room log shanty. Size of it was 16 by 20.